Welcome back, WNST, Taos of Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. We got the new swag app. Big thanks to Strategic Factory and Keith Miller. If you see Keith anywhere, give him a shout out. Tell him I said hello. I got to sell some ice cream here because it is Christmas week. We are shipping these incredible 8-packs of Taharka Brothers ice cream all over the country, east of the Mississippi in 1 or 2 days. But here locally, they literally bring the truck right up to your door. They drop it off. The kids come out. You can honk. The sweet potato crumble is there. That's the sweet potato ice cream with the brown sugar and pecan crumble. It's almost like a praline, almost like a southern praline. This guy, he's actually Western. He's from West Baltimore in Woodlawn. He has made a life in Jacksonville, covering all things Jaguars. And when his wife's Christmas tree pops up in the background, you'll see that Sam Kavaris has a wonderfully decorated Jaguar-ish tree, but his soul is not the purple of the Baltimore Ravens, but more the blue and white and the horseshoe of the Baltimore Colts. Welcome on from Sam Sportsline, my friend, giving love to my kindergarten teacher in Yulee, Miss Wassel. We say hello to Sam. Sam, how's life down there on the beach, man? You know, you got the hell out of here 3 decades ago. I think it turned out all right for you. Look at your tree. Might as well be a palm tree.
It's beautiful. I mean, my wife does a beautiful job on that. But yeah, you know, the weather here has been great. I know you're going to have and have had some tough weather, but
It's precipitating right behind me right here. Is it
right,
it's precipitating.
There? Yeah. But it's been beautiful here and a lot of good things. My oldest daughter just moved back here from Manhattan with two of our grandchildren and our son-in-law, and
everybody's leaving Manhattan from what I understand.
Well, it's pretty funny. We were so happy that, it turns out we were like, what if you had still lived there? And they said, we would have come and stayed with you anyway. So it's great to have them nearby. So all things good, except obviously the Jaguars are going to have the second pick in the draft, I guess. And that's the question. Will they take Justin Fields or will they do something else? And who's going to make that pick too? They fired Dave Caldwell, the general manager, and rightfully so. I mean, he was like 39 and 89 in his time here. And Nestor, I'm pretty convinced that Doug Marrone is the one that kept him here. When they got rid of Tom Coughlin, you know, they had demoted Caldwell to kind of an assistant GM kind of job.
Well, the place was a little messed up, right? Like, Coughlin had sort of scorched the earth with some players, and Ramsey may have been a jerk, but, like, it's really set the franchise back. Relationships have set the franchise back, right?
Yeah, and the problem was is that Coughlin, for all of the positive things, I mean, the guy won 2 Super Bowls, and he took the Jaguars to the AFC Championship game twice in the first 5 years of the franchise here. He was still trying to build a team that could win in the 90s. And that was, you know, that was his mistake. He took Taven Bryant with his, with that pick. He took with a first round pick. He took Leonard Fournette with a first round pick. And that's not how you win these days in the NFL. So besides that, he had this, as you said, kind of scorched earth. If a guy wanted to renegotiate his contract, he basically told him to pound salt and hit the road until the end of the year. And, you know, players don't want to hear like that. Although Jalen Ramsey, I mean, when we would talk to him, we would turn to each other and when we'd walk away and go, did you understand any of that? How does this guy find his way to his car every day? I mean, he is a not smart person. He's a wonderful athlete, but he has got serious problems with just kind of understanding how the world kind of works. Now, at that level of money made, maybe he doesn't have to worry about that anymore.
Yeah, I ran into Jalen Ramsey. I was 10 feet away from him, and he and Marcus Peters were trying to fight each other on the field at the LA Memorial Coliseum after they got their ass kicked by 50 points. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, these guys that bounce around. I mean, you know, Peters is one of these guys now where we had a broadcast on Monday night. The Ravens have imported a couple of Jaguars, right? One of them hit Terp as well. And, you know, the Ravens are always trying to, like, pick up the character side of what they're trying to do. I don't know what the Jaguars are doing, and it sounds like another rebuild. And look, every time I get together with you, you're a Baltimore guy, and you've made a life down there, a couple of decades down there before when Ursay was landing at the Gator Bowl down there, I've talked to David Lamb around about for many years. But, you know, this whole notion that I'm worried about the Orioles. They're in the last year of a 30-year lease, right? There's no one to go to the games. The games aren't open. The team is completely not competitive. And they're shutting down minor league baseball everywhere. We just had a 6-month period where sports shut down. And I wonder what happens to the Jaguars and what happens to the Oakland A's and what happens to the Tampa Rays and these, you know, ill-supported franchises before the pandemic. I don't know what happens after the pandemic about getting people back. But the Jacksonville NFL experiment, now that we're 3 decades into this, is interesting to me. But then I watched the Chargers run around in those royal blue pajamas on Sunday. And I'm thinking, well, when London's calling, they're going to get them first. You know, like, because I'm looking at the weakest antelope in the pack. You know what I'm saying? Like, and to me, all of these sports are going to have real problems when they fire the thing back up and put the tickets back on the app and want to get the old prices back, I think.
And part of the issue is that, you know, look at every team in the NFL. There are only certain teams that draw regardless of whether they win or not. And I mean, how many good teams are there in the NFL? 5?
This year? Not many. Yeah. Right.
Okay. 5. How many bad teams are there? 5. Let's say there's 5. So that's 10 out of 32. That means 22 teams are just kind of mediocre. So, you know, do fans go to see a mediocre product? In some places they do. You know, they always have gone in Kansas City. But I can tell you, in a place like Jacksonville, in a place like Baltimore, you know, obviously that team stays competitive now. The Ravens do. But, you know, you go to Dallas, when they're not winning, it's not like...
Well, it's fascinating. Like, because Texas and Florida are football states, right? There would be no disputing that, right? And whether it's Miami, Florida, Florida State, Texas, pick any of them. Texas Tech, you know, just go A&M. Go through any of the schools. The NFL product, I mean, the Oilers never were really supported. Like, and in the end, they didn't even have 50 people with their candlelight vigil. I think the Texans are supported sort of corporately and where they are. And I think they're the game in town. And
they've been competitive. You know, when they're bad, I've been to games where
they haven't been 2-14. They haven't been Browns bad. Had they been Browns bad or Jaguars bad at their low end. But look at Florida. You, the Dolphins and the Buccaneers never really like fully supported. Even the Falcons in Atlanta never fully supported because Saturday's more important than Sunday, right? Period.
When they win. Well, it's when they win, though. You know, the Dolphins, you can walk down and buy a ticket to a Dolphins game in the parking lot. Same with the Jaguars, same with the Bucks. Maybe the Bucks this year because Tom Brady went there. But, you know, I'm telling you that there's about 40,000, maybe 50,000 Jaguar fans that'll go to every game. But to sell out a 65,000-seat stadium in Tampa, in Miami, in Jacksonville, you've got to win. And part of it is that 20% of the crowd has gone to a college game on Saturday. And when the Jaguars first came here and they sold out the first 3 years, I mean, people were worn out on Monday.
Right out of the gate. The Brunel teams, Buscelli, those were great teams.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And if you look at how these teams, the college teams at the same time, you were watching Florida and Florida State and Miami compete for the national championship on Saturday. And then you were going to see the Jaguars who were playing very well early on. So, I mean, there's only so much disposable income, but more than that, there's only so much disposable time. And, you know, as I said,
Your dog's here. What's your dog's name?
Yeah, that's my youngest daughter's dog, Kiwi, who winters in Florida. Yeah.
I love that. Sam Kavaras joining us here from Jacksonville. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but your dog, your retriever, yeah?
Yeah. That's a Labrador retriever, and I've got a golden running around here somewhere.
My kitty cat, I'm leaving the door open because my wife is sunning herself in New Hampshire with her family. So Sam and I are visiting. I feel like a fireside chat. You know what's fascinating, man? Like, you built a career in television out of Baltimore and Woodlawn. You've had a life down in Jacksonville. And I've only really had you on the phone, right? Like, I see you at the Super Bowl. I think maybe you sat on my set maybe once at a radio row or whatever and dropped by and put your feet up or whatever that we do. But, boy, the new world's weird, right? You've been a TV guy forever. I put the weird video up of when I tried out. Because Moeller and I, my partner here at Baltimore Positive, we both tried out for the job that Chris Ealy got in Baltimore in 1988. So you want to be a sports guy. And I did it with Buren, and he did it with Al Sanders, I think, whatever, back in the day. And, you know, you had this whole life in television. It's fascinating because all I wanted to do was be Oscar Madison, right? All I wanted to do was be a writer. This, my 29th anniversary on radio was Sunday. So right. Mueller woke me up Monday morning and tried to make me cry and talk about my mother. And you can go find all that out the podcast audio vault or find it at Baltimore Positive. But so 29 years into this, and now, like, I don't know what the hell we are. And people ask me what I am. Am I a podcast, a video cast? Are we doing television? Am I doing a fireside chat? But it really is, this pandemic has moved me to this format, right? Where I literally am a television show having people I like you on with this incredible life experience to tell these stories that, quite frankly, the 2 minutes you got every night that dwindled down to 10 seconds to read scores, right? That
2 minutes and 15 seconds, by the way, by the time they got rid of me.
Right. You know,
and by the way, now that's totally gone. I don't know what they're doing in Baltimore, but most local television stations have just folded the sports into the news, and it's not a set thing. When I first started 1978 in Charleston, I got 6.5 minutes in the 6 o'clock news. Think about that.
That's a lot of high school sports, right?
Yeah. I mean, I was covering
a lot. That's a lot of golf results. Leo over at the Dodge dealership, man, he hit a hole in one today, right? You know, yeah, that's what it was, right?
So, you know, it's certainly evolved, and I don't think for the better. And what has happened is that, you know, and I've always said this, if the people who are running the news department were interested in sports, they'd have our jobs. Right, they don't know anything about sports. They
toy department
care about it. Yeah, it's a hole in their newscast. So this is a whole new world for you. What you are is a commentator who is on multiple platforms. You know, I'm a columnist these days for the local paper, and you know, I still consider myself a journalist, which is kind of literally, and I know that's a kind of cliche to say journalism is dead, but it's kind of disappearing.
It's, you know, incredible, and I don't know what that's...
I mean, even in sports, it's disappearing. I mean, I go on, like, I'm sure you have this year as well. The Jaguars have operated remotely, as every team in the NFL has. So all year long, I've been on Microsoft Teams calls with the coach and the players. I've never actually met any of the rookies. I haven't had that opportunity to walk down the hall with Doug Marrone and look at him and go, hey, so-and-so, he looks like he's terrible. And him look around and say to me, you know, he can't play at all, right? I mean, those kind of background things that you get as an actual journalist. I get on these Microsoft Teams calls, and they started with Zoom until the league finally said, you know, Microsoft's one of our partners, right? So that was kind of funny. But you get on these calls, and the people asking the questions and the kind of questions that are asked are, you know, the league is credentialing bloggers and fans who have a website instead of people who are trying to give the information to fans so they can make a decision whether they're going to spend their money.
Oh, it's embarrassing. I mean, the Ravens pulled down a tweet of Dez Bryant glad handing Cowboys players on the sideline. The tweet went out of the picture of him in physical space after testing positive, that they pull it down. I watch the NFL Network, and it's a joke. I am fully aware of who's willing to ask a question and get an answer when 23 players test positive and they make them go and play the game, and no one comes out and says how it happened, even as a cautionary tale for the community to say, look, we're the Ravens. We have $1 billion. We had 1 billion reasons to play that game on Thanksgiving night when Black Friday advertising for NBC was at its height. That game got played at 3 o'clock the following Wednesday. We effed up everything. We played with a backup team, and the best we can do is three paragraphs, and we're going to go Sammy Sosa, no speaky on it. You know, after that, you know, I've had some issues with this, and I have an issue with a league that played a game without a quarterback and sanctioned it.
Thought that was okay. And, you know, it's just, it's almost as if, you know, they've got that Broadway attitude of the show must go on no matter what. And I'm sure you saw yesterday, they, they told teams that they're not going to play in any kind of bubble. Imagine if they get to the playoffs or the Super Bowl, and the Super Bowl is scheduled, and everybody in the quarterback room tests positive.
They just lie about it and play.
You think so? Yeah.
I think they're capable of that.
They'd tell Aaron Rodgers.
Sam, are they capable of that?
Oh, at no question.
Okay, well, then that's all you need to know. That's all you need to know is if there's enough votes in the room that they're capable. Yeah. It was like there were 126 guys last week that lined up to overthrow democracy. You could always find someone. You know what I mean? Like, Sam Kavaras is here, the pride of Woodlawn. You and I got waxing about being old guys and doing television in 1978. We lost Vince Bagley, and I want to bring this full circle, and I'm going to dump some water on Mohler, have some fun with him, because I already did that this week. Mohler brought me on. My 29th anniversary was Sunday. Mohler brought me on to make me cry Monday. Now, Mohler was my high school guidance counselor in 1982 at Dundalk High, went on to become a superintendent, communication specialist at Jim Smith, wound up becoming the chief of staff for Kevin Kamenetz. When Kevin passed away, became a county executive. So 2 years ago right now, Don was a county executive. We were talking about things to do. Don told me, and I know I've told you this before, Don told me in 1982 when I wanted to like get a job, be in the business, he told me I was going to be the next Chris Thomas, Sam.
Sure.
So we just lost Vince. I found the pictures. Man, all you wanted to do was be Vince Bagley, right? Literally?
You know, it was who I wanted to be was Chuck Thompson.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. And it's, I'll tell you, Nestor, it's so fantastic that in my business, in our business, I had a chance to tell all those guys what a positive impact they had on my life. The last time I saw Vince was at the Masters. And who was he with? John Stedman, right? And they were standing in the front. And John said to me, it's hard to believe that they're not going to give Vince Bagley a credential. And I know that Augusta has their own set of rules. And I think eventually they credentialed Vince to come to the tournament. But, I stopped Chuck Thompson during the 83 World Series and just told him. I stopped Joe Namath when he was walking across the lobby of the Marriott at Sawgrass here. So, you know, one of my favorite stories, I saw John Unitas at a Ravens game, actually. And got in an elevator with him, just the two of us. But, Brooks came here, this is 20 years ago, maybe, to sign autographs at the Books a Million. And you would think, all right, Jacksonville, Florida, Brooks Robinson. There was a line around the building. And I happened to, and I'm there to interview him.
What year is this?
And maybe 20 years ago.
Brooks, he had a book. Okay, because I got Brooks' first book and he was still playing. Third Base is My Home. Yeah. I got it at the Hoschel Cones and the Brooks Robinson store. Remember those?
Sure.
At East Point Mall, you probably had one in Westview, right?
And I'll tell you what was interesting is that Brooks waited until the last possible second to go get in the car to go to the
Jim Hill Kiwi.
All right, Kiwi, cut it out. and I had an Oriole hat in my hand, and he grabbed it from me and he walked out. I asked him two questions. He grabbed my hat and he left. About a week later, Books a Million calls me and says, hey, there's a package here for you. And I go by, and Brooks had signed my hat, put it in a box, you know, to Sam, best wishes, and mailed it to the Books a Million, to me via Books a Million. I mean, nobody does that, right?
But Brooks is a special dude, man. Like,
that kind of stuff is interesting.
The new website that I put up at Baltimore Positive, you know, I've completely move my brand from just doing sports. We do a lot of politics. We do a lot of stuff. Sam Kavaras is here. If you just joined us from Jacksonville, Sam Sports.
You'd have a field day here in Jacksonville doing politics, by the way.
I'm sure it's a mixed bag. So, you know, the Vince story led to a John Stedman story. And I want to go backwards because I got something else to do, but John's name came up this morning because I had John Eisenberg on. Right. And we were talking about the history of the league and his book on the league. And he just did a thing on Greg Montgomery. This is a gift that Stedman gave me back when I was at the news, at the Evening Sun. This is the first ever thing I think that's ever used the word Super Bowl. So this is from Super Bowl I when they didn't call it Super Bowl, right? And inside are all of Stedman's notes, his handwritten notes from Super Bowl I. Here's the flip card. And wow. So this is Stedman's writing in here, man.
That's
so,
way cool.
Yeah. So, you know, and
you know, I'm on the Hall of Fame committee, the NFL Hall of Pro Football.
I know
Hall
you are. Committee. I know you are.
And I used to sit next to John all the time in the meetings. And
Sammy Mackey's not a Hall of Famer. I'm telling you, he's right. Not a Hall of Famer. Is that good?
That's pretty good. And then I tell you the other funny thing is and you know,
Buddy Young, let's get Buddy Young in. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I stopped using scripts in 1983 and I just ad-libbed the sportscast. I would give the director and the producer a rundown and we'd go from there. Vince Bagley only had handwritten notes his entire career. Handwritten notes in front of him his entire career.
Like a
never
note card?
Once, no, just on loose leaf paper. You know, he would write down, he would write some stuff down and he would look in the camera and he would start talking. So, you know, that's a lost art. What, when you watch guys now and women now who are on TV, watch their eyes move because all they're doing is reading what's on the screen.
Sam is here and we're talking, you know, I called you to talk Jaguars and maybe, you know, do some Baltimore sure. throwback. And I didn't even really put together the Bagley thing and all that stuff. And John Stedman's story is one of the things I love having you on. The Jaguars and where they are in the future, like, give me a little crystal ball on them. Cause I get together with you once a year. It feels like, and we're talking about them, the Wembley thing, which I understand. And I went over there. I'm really trying to understand the league in the aftermath of all of this with two teams in a stadium in LA that they can't sell for one. And yeah, just all right. of the, where the dust is going to settle when the whole thing's done. Because they're going to, you know, they're going to be the top dog. They're going to come out of this better, maybe the NBA as well, but they're going to come out of this better than anyone. Meanwhile, like, minor league baseball's over with as a thing.
Which,
right?
By the way, Jacksonville just got AAA by accident, literally by accident. You know, the Twins decided that they liked having, what did they call their group this year that was behind them? It obviously wasn't their AAA, but they had whatever their facility over in St. Paul. And so the Twins decided, well, we like that. So they moved their AAA to St. Paul. Well, the Marlins then said, well, wait a minute. We'd like to have our AAA in Jacksonville instead. So the AAA is coming here. The AA is going to Pensacola. New Orleans is right now without a team because the team that was supposed to be there is now in the new stadium in Wichita. So there's 40 cities that are going to be without baseball this summer, minor league baseball. But Jacksonville is the beneficiary, literally by accident and by a quirk of geography, being close to Miami.
But, see, it's fascinating, you know, for me because you still play baseball in Jacksonville, right? They don't play lacrosse there, or do they?
Lacrosse is very big here, but baseball is well attended because we have a beautiful stadium, which, by the way, is a small replica of Camden Yards. And it's beautiful. It's beautiful. So, you know, this has always been an interesting town because there's so much competition, not just for the dollar, but for time. I mean, you can go to the beach, you can play golf, you know, 12 months out of the year. And on a beautiful November Sunday afternoon, if the Jaguars are 1-12, I mean, what is your choice? You know, you got a chance to go play TPC or Pablo Creek or Sawgrass Country Club or Marsh Landing or Ponte Vedra, or, you know, go down and watch guys get beat.
This is your visit Jacksonville postcard.
Yeah, Sam, no, it is great. I tell you, interestingly enough, the Jaguars have done a bad job in drafting both from a talent standpoint. I mean, Kalevon Chaisson was their second first round pick this year, and he's ranked 120th out of 120 edge rushers in the National Football League. But they've done a bad job character-wise as well. And finally, and one of the things is, why would you trade a guy like Calais Campbell to the Ravens? I mean, Calais Campbell signed
because you didn't
want
to pay him $15 million, right? Period.
Yeah. So why not? I mean, that guy was worth $5 million a year in the locker room alone. And I mean, I don't know if you had a chance to meet him.
No, I haven't. I mean, I haven't met him. I haven't met Patrick Queen. I've met a lot. And to your
Calais
point,
Campbell's one of the greatest people you'll ever meet. I mean, he is a great, great person. He's the kind of guy that when he retires, you want him to live in your town. I mean, he is a phenomenal person and deservedly the Walter Payton Man of the Year last year in the NFL. How do you get rid of a guy like that just because it's an extra $2 million against the cap. I mean, it's just ridiculous when they do that. Jalen Ramsey, idiot, let him move on. Yannick Ngakoue, who I got to know well because he's a Maryland guy. He's a hothead. He didn't last long in Minnesota, you know, and I don't know how long he'll last there because he wants $22 million a year, but he's difficult to be able to set the edge, basically. Phenomenal pass rusher, but setting the edge, hard for him to do at his size. So, you know, the Jaguars, I know what they're going to do. The new general manager come in, he'll let Doug Marrone interview for the job, and then he'll get rid of him. And they're going to hire either Eric Bieniemy or Robert Saleh or somebody like that as the head coach. Shad Khan's commitment to social justice and equality and men of color is going to mandate that the Jaguars either have a black coach or a black general manager, one or the other, or perhaps both, because Khan has been kind of on the forefront of that with the NFL. Agree with it or not.
Sam is here from Jacksonville. Sam's Sportsline. You can find him in the thoughts and writing and columnizing and at a Woodlawn from the sunshine down there. The Hall of Fame thing for you and your involvement in that, you've been doing that for a long time. I can't. And I know most of you, you know, most of you who vote. Where's that? And I would say for everyone, we can get in a car and drive out to Canton. We missed out on the incredible Cleveland game the other night. My Cleveland trips the first 15 years, the Browns in the league, we did a bus trip to Cleveland. It's the way I got there every year. And we would stop at the Hall of Fame and make a day of it. And that's when the Hall of Fame was like, still like a crappy little silo and, you know, the little middle thing and half the plaques were a year and a half old and Lenny Moore's head had been scratched with racial awfulness. And I mean, I went to the Hall of Fame and found it falling apart at one point. And now when I go there, it's like, oh, Disney came to town. You know, they're going to turn this into, this is going to be Orlando.
Yeah. They hired David Baker from, you know, the Arena League. And he really had a vision of what to do. He got Tom Benson to invest a bunch of money. And he has been a tremendous fundraiser. And it's kind of changed what they wanted to be and what they are becoming. In terms of the voting, when I first got on the committee, there were originally 28 teams. And then I was a new ad along with a guy from Charlotte. So there were 30 voters and the president of the Pro Football Writers Association of America. So 31 voters. Now there's 48. Obviously 32 teams, one the president, and then there's 15 at large. But there's also now three Hall of Famers on the committee. You know, James Lofton and Dan Fouts and Bill Polian are on the committee. Lisa Salters was named to the committee this year. You know, it's become a very different kind of group. I mean, at the end of the meetings early on, we'd all be getting up and gathering our stuff and the meetings are interminably long. And Jack Buck would tap his glass and go, hey, wait, I have one more thing to say. And he would then tell the most profane joke you had heard in a year since the last meeting when he told that. But at the time it was 31 guys plus six administrators from the hall sitting there. Now that wouldn't be acceptable any longer. And it's a very different kind of feel of what goes on in there. The other thing, Nestor, is that I personally, and everybody disagrees with me, I don't think first ballot is an NFL Hall of Fame kind of thing. It's a baseball thing because of the way the voting is done. I don't think it's in the league, but with so many young people now on the committee, they think that's an important thing. And they feel, and what happens with everybody having a social media platform, you really get hammered when you don't put the people in that other people want. And if, you know, everybody is saying, and ESPN is saying, oh, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, and he's not selected this year, well, then all of a sudden it's your fault. I mean, is Calvin Johnson a first ballot Hall of Famer?
We're going to find out.
Played 9 years. We'll find out. Charles Woodson, he is. Peyton Manning, you know, I mean, you can't deny Peyton Manning's going to go to the Hall of Fame. Well, if you vote all three of those guys in, now you've got two spots left for 12 more players. So Alan Faneca, I mean, he, in terms of guards, he's a Hall of Famer. Now you got one spot for 11 guys. to decide because you decided that first ballot's an important thing?
Throw me the names of some of those 11 guys if you have it off the top of your head, because I just, you know, whether they are or aren't.
Well, we haven't cut it down to 15 yet, you know, but the 25, you got guys like Sam Mills who played in Baltimore for a while, right? Mm-hmm. Tony Boselli, obviously here from Jacksonville. I don't know if Fred Taylor will make it into the top 15, but well, you look at Fred Taylor's comparative stats to Edgerrin James and the fact that he didn't play with Peyton Manning, you'd have to give him some serious consideration.
They haven't put John Lynch in yet.
John Lynch has been a finalist for 6 consecutive years, and they still haven't put him in.
Poor Ira.
Right, exactly. So those are the kinds of things that I think fans from the outside don't look at. In baseball, you know, the guys from the Baseball Writers Association of America get 10 names to put on a ballot. If a guy's named on 75% of the ballot, he gets in.
Sammy, my last name's Aparicio. It says so right here on the corner, right?
Like, exactly.
I have given up on that. You know what I mean? Like, the Baseball Hall of Fame to me is just, I mean, I've been there a number of times. I went there on my tour in 15. I don't know that I'm going back again. I'm literally, it's a little bit of an out of the way if I'm going to drive somewhere. I've never been to, you know, Cumberland. I'd rather drive, see something else that I've never seen. Go on a train out in Western Maryland or something, or in Oakland on a day when it's snowing, or Deep Creek Lake where I've never been. So, you know, there are places I've never been here. I would say when it comes to that, the notion of sitting on the hill and Cal Ripken in 2007 and my cousin going in back in 1984 and the trips I made up there, I'm just done with that. You know what I mean? Like, between the Rose thing and the Bonds thing and the upcoming A-Rod, like all of it, I'm just...
A-Rod, Clemens, yeah, all of that.
Baseball's worn me out. Like, as a young guy, I wanted to be a voter. I wanted to be all of that, right? Man, I watch you guys on Saturday mornings the last 20 years. I'm always at the media center cleaning up my mess. I'm always hanging out looking for something to do on Saturday before the Super Bowl. And I've watched the antacids needed for you and Peter King and everybody running out to get coffee on that Saturday. And
it's hard.
You know, if Garceau steps down, I would be honored. I think I'm qualified to be on the committee, but I also would, if that were to happen and you nominate me and I got to do it, I would say I'll do it for a couple of years and see if I like it, because I'm not sure that I would like it, but I always loved it as a kid. I still have hope for the Football Hall of Fame. The Baseball Hall of Fame, if they sent me a ballot now, I'd send it back to them.
It's a Supreme Court appointment, by the way, too. It's pretty much lifetime. The team can't get rid of you once they name you.
Well, the Heisman was like that, and it screwed it all up, right?
Yeah. Well, I've been a Heisman voter since '78, and I mean, there's an organization that went from what seemed to be kind of some serious thought about who the best or what they ask you to vote for is the most outstanding player in America. So for 3 consecutive years in the early 80s, if you didn't vote for Herschel Walker, you weren't paying attention, right? If you didn't vote for Tim Tebow for 3 years in the 2000s, you weren't paying attention. I mean, you know, but then all of a sudden they went from 480 voters to now over 1,200 voters as kind of a popularity contest. So it's a I just think the Pro Football Hall of Fame is a privilege to be on that committee, to sit in there with. And if you walked in, Nestor, and as you said, you'd know everybody, even the most basic fan would recognize almost everybody in the room. But it's no longer John Steadman and Edwin Pope and Tom McEwen and Will McDonough and people like that. It's more of a modern day kind of entertainment group than it is, you know, the serious. And a lot of that's the newspaper's fault because they have gotten rid of people. As just a beat writer. It used to be somebody who covered the team all the time, the beat writer or somebody like me. I was the only TV guy on the committee for the first 15 years I was on it. So,
well, I've only missed 7 Ravens games in 24 years, so I guess I'm qualified. Written 2 books on the team too, but
well, you know, I sit next to Scott a lot at the meetings, and I like his approach. Very serious minded. He's not, you know, he's not swayed by what some commentators having to say on TV or the pressure that's put on us. I think he does a good job representing Baltimore in that room.
Well, I've been the guy every year for the week of where Joe DeLamula, you know, everybody comes by and, you know, the people that might make it, the people that are on the, I mean, it felt like Art Monk was, you know, 10 years trying
forever.
To get, right.
And he was.
So, yeah, he was. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a little bit of that going on. Sam Gavaras joining us here, the Pride of Woodlawn, and down in Jacksonville. I hope you're getting some golf in. You feeling healthy? Everything's good. I mean, like the virus.
New hip, new game.
Right? Yeah. When'd you get your hip done?
I got almost a year ago to the day. And, you know, they tell you can play after about 12 weeks, but it takes a while to kind of get back to trust it and so forth. And yeah, I'm playing a little more and I'm playing a little better.
So full mobility.
Oh yeah. It's unbelievable.
Everyone that's had it done, you know, every friend of mine that's had it done says, yeah. It's good. And I'm like, I'm going to keep the one I got. I'm good like that. But the bionic man. Hey, Sam, it's always amazing. Great to visit with you. Tell me about your website and what you do, because I know you do a bunch of stuff too.
Yeah, I'm still, like I said, a columnist for the Florida Times Union here in town. So if you go to jacksonville.com and just type in Kavaras, you'll find all the stuff archived. And I still run my website, samsportsline.com, which I update with some video blogs and my Twitter account, my Facebook account, as well as whatever I'm happen to be writing about. So the one thing I did want to mention, Nestor, is that I went to the Masters in November. And, you know, they only credentialed 25% of the media. It happened to be my 40th Masters. And
wow,
there's a walk I take every year at Augusta. And I wrote about that on samsportsline.com and also was in the Times Union that Sunday. If you have any interest in what the kind of the mystique of Augusta National is, you get a real kick out of that.
I've never been. I turned down a chance to go in 2001. And then I had an invitation, my wife and I, after she survived in 15, I had an invitation from a coach who had some access. And we had a flight and my wife wasn't well enough. So we have never been. So, you know, right. As it goes, maybe one day if it's meant to be. It's kind of like seeing Pearl Jam or the Stones or any, maybe it's, if it's meant to be, it'll happen again, like a concert at Merriweather, which I'm looking forward to probably more than anything. Sam, take care. I'm not coming to the Super Bowl. You know, there's no radio row. Right. I'll be working from here. And I'm sorry, we will not see each other. And obviously with the Jacksonville Ravens game, you'd have been, you know, everything's weird. You know, I've been to three games this year. It feels like a year off, but I miss it. I mean, certainly not being in Cleveland on Monday night felt like a mistake, right?
Sure. Gardner Minshew will start for the Jaguars this week. And he's the only quarterback on the Jaguars roster that's thrown more touchdowns than interceptions. So you got that to look forward to.
Well, and he's got a great mustache. So, you know, other than that, it all works. Sam, take care. Love to the family.
Right.
You have a beautiful tree. And give me some dog food, all right?
I will. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Sam Gavaras joining us here. He is down in Jacksonville, Florida, awaiting the one in whatever they are, Jaguars, taking on the Ravens. We are selling some ice cream around here. We're boxing up 8 of these, shipping it out to our friends at Harker Brothers, making delicious flavors, 28 to choose from right now out on the website. Employee-owned as of this week, an incredible story on Tuesday night out of Facebook Live about how Sean Smeaton grew this thing up and all the cool guys that have been a part of making ice cream and talking ice cream. $15.70 off the 8-pack comes to your door for $40. It's the best deal going, and even better than that, it's a great gift to give as well. I am Nestor. You can find me out on Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and Snapchat and Instagram, eating ice cream, shipping ice cream, as well as warm football thoughts on the backside of the Lamar Show on Monday night. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore positive.